Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning into today's show. I am your host, Angela Alberti. If you've had a chance to listen to a few of my podcasts, you know that my specialization always has lied around this very interesting world of human capital. And what a wonderful opportunity and privilege I have to sit today with Marx Brooks Lewis of LavaSource HR. This is the episode that you want to tune into when we talk about a globalized workforce and the very different trends that are happening in this fast-paced and quickly evolving world of work around us. So thank you guys for joining us. Mark, can you give us a brief synopsis on you and your background and what it is that you do?
Yeah. Hi, Angela. First of all, thank you for inviting me on today. Really excited to talk about LavaSource, but also to speak with you as well about some of the complementary things that both our businesses have in common. Right. In terms of my background, I've been working in and around HR and IT for the past 20 years with lots of big global organizations, rolling out Workday, Oracle, SAP, building and running global HR shared service centers, and I guess being part of business transformation activities, like many people do in the corporate world. And that's what I've been spending my last 20 years doing. Up until around 12 months ago, and that's probably a good segue into what changed for me. I guess I looked at what I'd been doing for the past 20 years and thought, did I want to be doing the same thing for the next 20 years? Everybody has that moment in their life. Mm-hmm. And lots of people want to do something impactful in their lives, positively for others as well. And I'd been doing some of that in the work that I'd been lucky enough to undertake, but I didn't feel like I was doing enough. I thought I was part of the problem as well as the solution. So I thought I would put my money where my mouth was and try to create something different so that we could spread hope and opportunity into some of the communities that that I'd been working within for that last 20 years.
Awesome. Thank you for that. That's very inspiring. And, you know, I'm really glad that our listeners have a chance to tune into your story. Can you expand on that a little bit more, specifically what it is that you guys do from a platform technology perspective? And also what was that moment and where, you know, that was going to be that differentiator, because we're living in this world now where there's many different platforms that are popping up left and right. So can you expand on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, in terms of the moment, I guess I was starting to look at what future of work meant to me. I was looking at all of the initiatives that I kept hearing about in terms of diversity, equity, inclusivity, looking at all the talent programs. And I wasn't really seeing, if I was being brutally honest, anybody changing the dial. And it hadn't for the last 15, 20 years, pockets of incremental change. You think about a glass ceiling as a real thing, perhaps little cracks that might open up and a bit of light might shine through. But right. Every attempt that I saw to smash through that would be thwarted by something else that would pop up. It felt like nobody really was able to just smash the glass ceiling fully. So my idea was to look at what was happening in the world where those opportunities were being created in a different way. And I saw that marketplaces were doing that in a very positive way. But I also saw some things I didn't like around maybe trying to look at the talent that people were trying to help and effectively seeing them as ways to earn rather than ways to spread opportunities. So things like charging individual people who are looking for work a subscription fee, knowing that actually $5 a month in the UK or the US isn't a great deal, but it's an awful lot in other parts of the world where that might be a meal on the table. Wow. Looking at where the actual funding for the transactions and where marketplaces make their money, mainly from the talent rather than from the organizations themselves. And so it was starting to look like a cheap way of accessing labor, a bit like labor arbitrage under a different kind of name, rather than really doing what a lot of these companies were saying they were trying to do, which was to spread this opportunity globally and to rebalance some of the actual funding that you could get from employment to economies that really needed it. And I didn't really like that. That didn't resonate with me. So I took some of the ideas that I thought worked well as concepts and then just changed that up a little so that it became free to join if you were looking for work and therefore truly kind of universal in the sense that it was open to all, focused purely on skills rather than culture and fit, which is another one of these things that I've seen for the past kind of 20, 30 years where you have to be a certain type of person to get a role. And recruiters are busy people and therefore they're always looking for the low hanging fruit. They're never going to, in the first sift, consider putting into a search with a hiring manager, a mother who's got some children that's looking for flexible work, a parent who needs help from their kids, any kind of situation where support is required or flexibility built into that interaction, recruiters typically avoid those at the first pass. And therefore you end up with largely the same pool of people over and over and over again. And it doesn't really matter who leaves an organization, they're replaced with somebody largely from the same kind of background or with the same openness to be able to work purely for the employer rather than the balance being a little more mixed between the two. So I wanted Lava to be something completely different than those models to give the people who really needed the help the best possible chance of accessing the work that they needed, but also for the people who were looking to create new diverse pools of talent and to really change the mix of their employee base or their talent base to be able to access that talent easily and in a way that perhaps they couldn't in other platforms. So that was the premise behind it.
You know, I think that it's fascinating because when I hear you discuss the onset of what was Lava Source, there's this sense of advocacy that you look to maintain for the workers. And I resonate that, you know, with our model as well on my base pay side. But what I think is truly behind that is the way that you have, you know, set up your pricing and how you have access to these candidates. This is really where the advocacy can play in. And truly, what does that translate to diversity, equity, and inclusion? Knowing that you're giving access to your platform to people from lower income nations and countries around the world, and what is their makeup and what do they represent on a global nature? How have you guys, you know, I know that y'all are just getting your footing, but what is the plan to attract and represent talent all over the world and build those talent pools so that you can become a reliable source for organizations to lean to in alternative talent strategies?
That's a great question. Multifaceted answer, I think. So the yes. First thing is we've been quite fortunate that without a huge amount of PR right now, we've got talent registered in now over 40 countries from different parts of the world, all geographies covered in terms of the Far East to the Far West, North to South. And we haven't really pushed out with huge amounts of marketing spend. That's all around the organic nature of the messaging that we've been doing and selecting partners who perhaps bought into what we're trying to do from a value set perspective and created ecosystems that create real value from working in a particular way so that we can all try to achieve good things through positivity and through sharing the kind of power that large companies and those that care can bring together. I think the concept of how can an organization trust a marketplace as well, that's really important too. There are things that need to be there around compliance and around just doing the basics. And that's super important. I know no large organization is going to trust a marketplace without those things in place. And so they have to, there is a minimum. And that's why partnerships with companies like yourselves is really, really important. And I think most marketplaces will end up in some form of ecosystem alliance with an organization such as yours, just to make sure that the boxes that need to be ticked from a compliance perspective as a minimum are ticked, and everything upon the pyramid then can be built because you've got a solid base. So that's super important. I think there's some other things as well around recognizing that in our case, the value of working in HR and for large organizations for a period of time carries value. So when we look at HR business partners, for example, that may have worked for Pepsi or for Unilever for 20 years, they may not have moved around lots of organizations. They may not have moved around a lot in that organization, but they know an awful lot about HR. They've worked in an amazing brand for a period of time. And therefore, if they're looking to do something different, maybe they don't have to resign, or maybe they don't have to work in a different part of the business. If they truly want something culturally different as well, they've got to look outside of their organization, and being able to tap into a marketplace such as ours or another one and just say, actually, I'd like to do 5 or 10 hours a week helping a startup or working in a similar role for another large enterprise or for a different sized company, so they can just look at the skills and just challenge themselves, do something fresh, do something that keeps that makes a little bit kind of different for them, and earn some money at the same time. But you know, they may be a smaller compliance risk than perhaps some other segments of talent, where perhaps it's an IT operative who's a coder, and they've worked for perhaps some smaller brands, and it's not immediately obvious to the customer that's looking for talent who those brands might be. Mm-hmm. So I think the actual buying process of acquiring talent and recognizing what are those markers that even in the current recruitment process would give you confidence if you were to leverage those and put them onto the new way of working. What are the things that are still there? Because they haven't gone away, right? If somebody's been working for Pepsi for 20 years, it's on their CV, it's on a marketplace. There's certain things that carry weight. Keep the things simple that remain simple, and really focus the how do you manage risk from that process, and what needs to be new and what can be carried that actually still holds true.
You know, if you ask me what the future of work is, I think it's now. And I think it's exactly what you guys are doing. It's that untraditional approach to finding and delivering talent, perhaps more of a skills-based, shorter-term assignments, which is really one of the questions that I wanted to ask you next is, at least what we're experiencing here is the great resignation, dun, dun, dun. You know, it's got this notoriety, of course, because we have 3.5% of the population on average leaving their jobs, finding new ones. I mean, there has never been a higher number of solopreneurs that have filed for their own business entities than we have experienced since the onset of the pandemic. So I certainly feel like the pandemic has maybe pressed the fast forward button on the future of work. And we are somewhat experiencing this at an emotional level in the worker population, people just leaving. What is your idea around all of this? And furthermore, retention, and what does retention mean for companies across the globe?
Yeah, it's on everybody's particular question, isn't it? So I think there's the usual things around generational differences. I think it's become pretty obvious when you look at all the studies from Gartner and Fosway, and you can pick any one of them, quite frankly, they all say the same thing, that people who are leaving university today have different expectations of what they're going to get from work and from life than they did, than their parents did. And that's definitely been accelerated as a consequence of the pandemic. I think that most people have recognized that the balance between work and life is achievable. I guess it's something that they might be able to control, whereas previously It was simply a case of identifying a role that somebody could actually obtain, and then trying to stay in that role for as long as possible and climb the corporate ladder. Those times have largely gone, not completely. If you're coming out, you want to be a lawyer, or you want to work in consulting, or you want to be a banker, there are certain industry segments that, that will always have a form of way of working that, that really probably holds true irrespective of the generational differences and the pandemics, because there are structures that are just really tough to break down, but also people who are talented that want to get to be a partner in a certain type of organization because their parents did, and it's just ingrained into the way that they've been brought up. So some of that will remain, but largely I see generational differences where people are maybe going to challenge what the work contract or the employer contract looks like. So for us now, it's still quite difficult when you sign a contract with an employer to work for another employer, despite the fact that you might have 20 hours per week that you'd actually like to do something different. Mm-hmm. You have to go to HR and request some support to be able to work for somebody else. Well, that's your own time. This is an 1860s type mentality that we're still holding on to, where all the power is based on a contract. The law is pretty clear, but the reality where that law fits in our new world is wholly inadequate for our modern times. So I think, I see a shift in the employee relationship, the employer relationship, where the work contract needs to change. And I think that a smart organization right now, if they're really trying to tap into accessing talent in a different way, will look at the structure of their employer contracts, and they will focus on what's important around privacy and around things that they don't want their employers to go and share with a competitor. That stuff obviously is a constant. That's not going to go away. It's really important. But the things that matter less around, would you like somebody who's maybe working for one of those organizations I mentioned earlier to work for a startup for, you know, 5 hours a week? Do they really need to come and ask HR for support with that? Do you want to run the risk that if you say no, that that adds to the great resignation because that person actually just wanted to do something a little different? They didn't want to leave the organization. They didn't want to take another role in internal mobility because it's the same culture. They just wanted to do something different on top. And there's an awful lot of people, millions and millions of people all around the world that actually might be quite happy to add some variety to their lives, to stay with the organizations they're in. And that alone could add a degree of correction to the great resignation, where people don't think about leaving because what was unhappy before has become happy without needing to change. So there's a lot of subtle things that can definitely come in that can improve the situation. And when we're talking about generational items as well, this concept that when you get to plus 50, you're suddenly no good in the workplace and your skills have been building for 30 years and not required anymore. There's a certain kind of craziness, I think, to some of that, because those aren't people who have the most understanding, the most experience. I think there's perhaps a shift with what an organization might need from people who reach a certain point. And I think this concept of career coaches, having people in the organization whose role it is to get the most out of the people that are coming through and acting as talent sponsors, but across organizations. So they don't have to be somebody that's got a skill in technology, for instance, to be a talent coach within the technology function. It might be that they've worked in the legal function or in HR. So some of those kind of traits and skills you have around leadership are meant to be cross-functional. That's the whole point of creating general kind of business leaders anyway. And so this is a great time for people who are moving into those latter stages of their career to maybe be used differently by organizations to really allow the younger talent to flourish and to make connections as well, where, again, they feel like actually there's a purpose to them being in the organization. It's part of more like a family feel than a cold corporate feel. And I think these are not just subtle extensions and evolutions of an EVP. It's more radical in terms of really thinking about how to treat people in general and how that translates from life to work and how the two actually become rather inextricably linked.
It's almost, you know, I read across it. It's almost as if it's not the Great Resignation. We need to stop calling that. It's the Great Reawakening. And I really think it's fascinating that platforms like yours are allowing to be a part of that process. You guys are a part of that equation. So what an exciting time it is. Now I'm going to kind of go to the boogeyman, I guess you could say. And you mentioned, and you talked on this earlier, it's the ever-evolving concept of compliance. And there's an incalculable aspect to this. We know that the way that talent is being delivered is changing. The worker model is changing. The worker type is changing. The government bodies around these countries and nations across the globe are starting to evolve around them and continue to potentially invest many dollars around regulation of workers and our concept, you know, and maybe a lot of this is attributed to what Uber did and you know, these different platforms have done. Can you go into the importance behind this and what your general thoughts are on maintaining compliance through a globalized talent supply?
Yeah, so I think that ultimately for all governments, this all comes down to tax dollars. So we start from there.
Of course.
I think so.
Yes, it's very true.
You're running a
what a
country.
Surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has to start there, I guess, because if you're going to deliver social care to a country, you have to have money to do that. And therefore, it's almost an inevitability that the companies and the people who work in a country contribute to the general kind of provision of societal care and support to the peoples of that country. So I think the concept that platforms or any other type of mechanism can earn money without paying a fair amount of tax, that's an unfair position for anybody to take. We've had a lot of news around technology companies being situated in low tax havens, and the recent kind of agreements to charge a minimum amount of corporate tax around the world. That took a very, very large amount of time to agree and only really happened when it became obvious that unless something was done, we were going to have this situation become worse and worse and worse. And I don't think any large member of the G20 really wanted that. So there's a commonality to the desire and need to receive income. And I think marketplaces will need to be the same. They'll need to make sure that they're taking care of the things that matter to society, to their members who use the platform, to their customers who are trying to demonstrate that they're being compliant themselves and using compliant platforms. And for those organizations that use them, they'll often have government contracts, and that will usually be a requirement to demonstrate that their supplier chain is also working in a way that is fair and reasonable and just. So I think that smart marketplaces will recognize that paying tax is the right thing to do around making sure that the talent on the platform is paying its tax in the right jurisdictions or in the right way and is following the right processes insofar as it is able to. But I hear an awful lot of marketplaces saying, well, you know, it's freelance talent, it's not our problem. As long as we're making our 15 or 20% on each transaction and we're paying our tax, somebody else's problem. And there are hundreds and hundreds of marketplaces operating exactly like that. And there's some really smart marketplaces. And you think, well, you could, if you can find a way to make that much money and to be able to market your product in such an efficient way, you could find a way to kind of solve those compliance issues pretty quickly. And the simplest way for them to do it, of course, is staring them in the face. Not just your organization, which does it really well, there are others too, where we could partner and effectively say, look, we need to do reference checks, we need to do the compliance things, we need to make sure people are paying their taxes correctly, we need to make sure that people have access to the right type of care. and really thinking about that evolution of that employee-employer model earlier, and perhaps taking some of the benefits that employers used to give to employees and making those more accessible to people who are looking for freelance work, and really spreading things like healthcare benefits and doing things differently. But you know, there's an easy way for a lot of those platforms to do more around compliance and tax and risk, and just largely ignoring it because it's too complicated, because tax is complicated. It isn't really
good. Because it's more profitable the other way.
Efficiently. It does feel like it's more around how can they grow quickly and how can they make the most money and how can they turn the value of an organization into a large number so that they may be subject to a potential buyout, and not what are you here for in the long term? What does your ecosystem plan look like? What do you stand for? And how are you demonstrating that what you are saying you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis, so that the people who need the money are getting it, the companies that are looking for talent are doing it in a meaningful and aligned way to not just the values, but the regulations of a country and of an organization. And how can you make sure that that money is flowing in the right way so that your customers and your talented professionals can see that you're doing this for all the right reasons, and therefore that means transparency. And one of the things we do from a transparency perspective is you get to see and meet the people who work for the company. And so we're trying desperately not to be just a technology platform that people can go on and post a job and find work. That's pretty basic, but you just get some kind of AI tool, do some matching, have a mechanism to do the payments and do some credit checks. And it's a fairly uncomplicated process because people typically do the work for themselves because you built the tech platform. But how do you know what the people are like behind that organization? And how do you know what they stand for beyond the written values? You need to be a face in front of that as well. And so the guys at Lava desperately try to make themselves known. We try to jump onto sessions like this so that you can see there's some real people who really care about what we're trying to do. And hopefully the meaning and the feeling of the answers we provide demonstrate the kind of commitment that we want to bring to change in a positive way. But yeah, you have to see this stuff and feel it for it to be real. You can't just write it on a website, build a tech platform and say, it's all fine. We're doing our thing.
Right, right. Well, I love that. It's really tying the human element behind all of the tech noise. And there's a lot of that, right? Yeah. There is a lot of that. How do we align to, I mean, at the end of the day, we are in the business of talent and talent delivery. And what more sacred thing to have in the sake of your hands is a person's livelihood. And that at the end of the day is in essence, one of the more human elements to what we do. So I admire what you guys are doing. Anything on a general basis, right? That you feel excited about on the future trajectory of maybe the way that work is delivered, maybe it's in the world of HR, maybe it's in the world of talent, tech. What trends and ideas excite you the most about what's happening right now?
Lots is the short answer. I think if I take HR first, we've had the Ulrich model for a very long time. There's some good things to it, right? It does things really well, and it's allowed HR to have a more defined purpose, that people kind of understand if they don't work in HR, what it really does, other than the basic things that people tend to come into contact with HR for. But it's a static resourcing pool. So the moment that a leader in an organization goes to their HR leader and says, I've got something new, it means a constant reprioritization of everything that HR was doing before, or they work for an extra 10 hours that week, or they, if they have any budget, which is typically zero for the year, they might be able to hire in some contractors to take some of the pain away. But the reality is that the model for providing HR services into a business is static. but the business demand is variable. So nothing about that Ulrich model really can create anything other than a constant set of chaotic situations within an organization. And having global HR shared service centers does a little, having global business centers helps, but it's all within the confines of an organization. And what really HR needs is to recognize that, you know, we're all on the plane. And if you imagine the analogy where you're dropping and the oxygen masks come down, and they say to parents, put yours on first before you put your child's on. Well, HR is that parent, and it's always putting the mask on the child first. HR always puts the mask on itself last.
Very true. That's true.
And it was okay up until the pandemic. And then the last 2 years have seen HR be stretched beyond anything that they've been able to cope with, and large numbers of people leaving HR for the first time. Even people who've been in companies for 15, 20 years saying, that's enough, I can't do this anymore. I can't work another 10 or 20 or 30 hours per week. I was already working 60 hours per week. So it's become unmanageable in that sense. So one of the things that we wanted to do is to say, what does Ulrich 2.0 look like, for instance? The model's fine as long as when somebody comes in with a new request, there's somewhere to go and fulfill that need. So let's say I'm a HR director and I've got, you know, 50 HR people, and they're already doing the work of 60 HR people. If I get a new request in, I don't want to go through that same reprioritization that I've had for the last 10 years. And therefore, recognizing I don't have a huge budget, which I'm never going to have, where is the place that I can go and get some help? Maybe I need to just get 2 weeks worth of activity to create a new organization in a new country where there's no people currently there. So it's setting up a new entity. Maybe it's looking at a disciplinary issue in a plant, and all my people are in one part of the country. And actually this plant, because it doesn't have so many people, didn't have a permanent HR representative. And I don't want to fly them there at significant cost, or I don't want to stop them doing what they're doing. Maybe I just want to reach out to a marketplace and say, is there somebody there with HR business partner skills who's worked for a large company, the Pepsis, for instance, of this world. So I know that the brand is one I can trust, that is just looking to do some disciplinary and grievance work, or to go in and meet with a manager, an employee, and that might cost $100 rather than having to reprioritize the entire work stack, or spend thousands of dollars getting someone on a plane, taking, you know, days and days of effort where you could have them there the same day on a platform. So there's some really fundamental differences to how HR can deliver services and really extend the Ulrich model into something different by adding a virtual bench, which is what organizations used to do when they had a bit more money 20 years ago, and that's kind of dried up. But this concept of a virtual bench is one that we think will really take off. That's one of the true value proposals of having a marketplace. I think technology in our sphere, it's HR technology. So that's anything and anyone that's involved in delivering or supporting HR technology will find those folk on the platform. And that's all around making sure that you can access the people and know that they've got not just the skills that they need, but actually they've got the experience that you're looking for and of a quality that you need as well, because those things didn't change just because it's easier to access talent. Just simplistically saying, I just need someone with Java skills. Well, anybody can go onto a platform, can tick the box and say they've got Java skills and wait for work to come. That reference point alone as a data item isn't sufficient. So how do you make sure that quality is embedded into that process? So all of the key decisions around buying resources, acquiring labor that used to be there, they still remain. So they're really important from a trend perspective to factor into marketplaces as well, so that when you are acquiring talent, you can do so in a way that gives you the confidence that they're going to be able to do the job as well as having the skills that people claim they have, What are the quality validation points that you really need to be able to see, feel, and touch to know that that person isn't going to cause you a problem, but simply because you weren't able to ask the right questions on that platform?
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really realigning the way that we look at HR and what it has been for the last 20 years. I think that, you know, having that virtual bench is something that we will see transcend itself into various industries across the board, inclusive of HR and conceptually speaking what HR is. So interesting there. Love what you said about the technology and taking that an element further and really identifying areas that aren't going to check the box or outside of the box that are inclusive to what we're really looking for in the example of the Java developer. You know, I think it's fascinating to sit with you. I could really sit here and talk with you all day. You have a lot of great things to lend, you know, these ideologies into the way that we conceptualize work and how it should be delivered, particularly in the HR space. What is your content diet? What are you reading every single day to stay up to date on these trends and ideas? And I could probably take away a few pointers myself when I have a chance to read up on things.
So I'm actually terrible at this. I get told different books and different publications every week by people, and they say, "I've read this and it's amazing. It made me feel like this." And actually, I consume information in a different way. I guess I see the odd or hear the odd podcast, and some of them I take snippets from. I look at a few articles on LinkedIn, but I can't remember the last time I picked up an actual book from an academic perspective, which is terrible. I have an academic background, but yes, when I stopped having to do it, I stopped doing it for the love. So I read books just because I enjoy the books I want to read now. I tend to take my information from conversations, from watching what people do, from looking at life and extracting things from it, which is perhaps more organic, and that's maybe the way I was brought up as well, from a background in working class Wales. It kind of everybody was trying to do nice things for other people, and you listen a lot, and I take a lot of my information from listening, from the verbal and the non-verbal cues that you see when you interact with people, from looking at some key people who others seem to respect and listen to. And I guess really hone in on who are the people that are trying to deliver change, but have actually been there and done some of that work themselves as well to know what it feels like on the coalface. I'm not a big lover, if I'm honest, of hearing from thought leaders who have these great ideas about how to make life better in a function or in an organization. And then when you look at what they've done, they've never worked in a company. They've often worked in academia all their lives. And it's a bit like politicians where, you know, if you're a career politician, you don't know what it's like to have an impact to a policy you create. If you've always worked in academia, you may be super smart. You don't really understand the impact on a day-to-day basis of the things you're purporting to change. So I tend to hone in on a very small number of people who are saying things that I think actually that kind of makes sense. It's a terrible thing to do. It's a common sense barometer. And if it feels like the right thing, if it's aligning with the values that matter to me, and I can resonate with what they're trying to do and use it to improve the things that I do to make somebody else's life better, that typically is where I spend my time, rather than reading books from people I don't really know, you know, because a lot of that stuff's pretty generic, and it might make sense, but how do you take something that makes sense and apply it to what you do? That's all around the interaction and the way, for me, that you hear about that information, and therefore I tend to not be as structured on this point as I probably should be.
I think you're right. I mean, maybe it is the fact that I'm also, you know, with a startup organization and trying to juggle everything in my personal life that's kind of flipped upside down recently with being a newer mom. But a lot of my intake on information is outside of books. I wish I could find a point in my life where I can pick up a book and read it. But it is, you know, where I find that information, where I am living. And you're right. I mean, many of it is theoretical and not enough application on on what the preaching is actually listing within the book. So definitely some good information. Just curious, where did the actual name of the company become inspired from? Lavasaurus HR.
So when you create a brand, I was told that you had to either make it like a Ronseal type of brand. So it had to say exactly what it was so that people could immediately associate with it. So that the kind of brands that people can go, oh yeah, I get that. That's concrete cementing. You must do concrete cementing. So something like that obvious. And there are brands like Apple that everybody recognizes what they do. But actually that took a real effort and continues to require a huge amount of marketing budget so that new people know that Apple is not an Apple, it's a computer. So there's two forms to that. And so I thought, well, we were going to be doing some stuff in and around HR. We were going to do some things around sourcing talent. So the source HR bit kind of started to form. But what really resonated with me and I wanted to make sure was it was part of that kind of solution was if we were going to create new opportunity and hope and genuinely make it something that was global in all the places I'd lived and worked around the world. And I have a big love of geography as well. So volcanoes was one of the things that really kind of came to mind. My last big kind of stint working abroad was in the Philippines, where Mount Pinatubo had a pretty big impact on the world a little while ago.
Right. So I thought,
oh, if you think about what lava does, it kind of generates land, it generates new life and opportunity. It might take some time, but actually, life on Earth really does require us all to be sitting on something to be able to kind of, operate. So I thought
important element, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So I thought, well, that matters to me. It's the creator of life. Lava is a real thing. So I thought, if I can crunch those together, Lava Source HR, it's doing the sourcing Ronseal bit. It's doing hopefully the interesting something a bit different that matters to us. That's always going to be front and center around the lava. The two combined to create that kind of emblem, and having the orange and bright colors, the marketing guy said that might be useful as well when trying to create other things in the future if we ever become super successful and help lots of people. So
I'm sure you guys will. I'm excited for y'all. You guys have I think a year since having launched, is that right?
I stopped doing my last kind of gig around a year ago and started doing some research for the first 3 months. But we've only really, if you take the soft launch out from July of last year, really been fully launched since September that we started to really push. So a little over 6 months. So I guess if we've hit 40 countries in 6 months and we've got hundreds of people that are on the platform that really see this as a genuine opportunity to find work, not just another platform to register on, because it's specific to HR and HR tech, then hopefully we'll be able to take this out to more than 50 countries by the middle of this year, hit several thousand people on the platform, and hopefully then start to really generate some meaningful income for them so that we can be moving that money around the world, perhaps a little more fairly.
Well, it sounds cliche, maybe it sounds naive, but I go back to a lot of what you said, and it goes down to doing the right thing, whether that's from the compliance perspective, from the workers' perspective, from the diversity perspective. And that seems to be a lot of what you hold true, Mark. So I think that just with that, you guys are destined for success. And if these first months, 6 months have showcased that, I would agree. I mean, 40 countries, hundreds of workers in this talent market. I'm excited to see what the future holds for you guys. Are you willing to give any advice? And maybe this is a takeaway selfishly for myself as well, to the startup entrepreneur.
Wow. So I think the first thing to do is to never give advice unless it's requested or asked for. That's definitely something that is important. I see a lot of people offering advice, and I don't seem to remember asking people for advice. So you know, communication, it must have 2 points.
That's right.
I think just listen a lot, because there's an awful lot of people that have gone before and have succeeded or failed, and there will be lessons in there that you can take. But even where somebody's succeeded and they've done something in a particular way, it doesn't mean it's the right way or the way that you have to take that message and apply it to your way of working. So that's one of the things I learned in the corporate world, and it remains valid for an entrepreneur, I think. So find what works for you, and augment things that might have worked for others, because often things don't lift and shift very well because there are some personal things in there that make it work for others and might not make it work for you. The usual stuff around just work hard and don't give up. That's true, right? It's not going away. Unless you're super lucky and things fall into your lap, you're going to be doing an awful lot of work. You're going to be giving up things because what you're doing matters. So that purpose that you're doing it for has to be strong enough to withstand all of those things that you give up in the first place. And if that's looking ahead in 10 years and saying, I'm going to have enough money so that I can make sure that my family and the people that matter to me are never going to be in the situation that they're currently in. And that's a lot of the world, right? This concept of the Great Resignation is a luxurious position that a lot of countries have, but for many other countries in the world, never existed in the first place. There's people not giving up their jobs if they're the main breadwinner, because that's not something they have to be able to do. So I think as an entrepreneur, especially one that is trying to do good things, recognize that the stories that you hear, the things that you're trying to do from a maybe a Fortune 500 perspective, and if you're trying to make the company grow, they're important, but that's, you know, 0.1% of the world. The other 99.9% of the world is trying to find a way to make a living. And if you're trying to do things and it really, really matters, think about them as well, and try to create something that's truly sustainable, not just for those big westernized countries that have enough money to be able to buy your product and therefore create the future value that your shareholders might require. That's a very kind of capitalist view of doing this. And if we're going to talk about genuinely building change and transforming how we live and work, those thought processes have to be fundamentally different. And that's where people who've got true value sets that create organizations that care more about the 99.9 than the 0.1 will start to hopefully be recognized as the future. And then we can move more and more of those people who are too focused on the capitalist side to the left, and kind of just create something that's fundamentally different. So don't give up. Don't listen to all the things you hear. And if you've got something that matters, go for it. But don't go for it just because you think you can make money. Go for it because you think you can achieve the sustainable change that when you look back on your deathbed, actually you did the things that you really wanted to do from life, and you left a legacy that mattered and helped others beyond your immediate sphere.
Wow, I'm floored by that. What awesome words of wisdom to share. I know that our listeners will find value in that, just like I did. So thank you for sharing that. I think you really took it to a level that was somewhat philosophical, and it really kind of helped perhaps awaken some of the things of the Western world and this startup unicorn trying to grow. But truly, what can we do to make a difference? So thank you for sharing that. Now, as we wrap up today's podcast, where can our listeners actually get a hold of you? Where can we find you and connect with you?
The usual Google search. Other searches are available, but LarvaSource HR, if you pop that into Google, then it'll come up, but it's LarvaSourceHR.com. We've got our website and all our contact details on there. And if you want to talk to and see a real human being, as well as use the tech, then we have those options immediately available. We really have got now a global pool of people who are just waiting and ready to respond to real opportunities. It'd be great to give them those roles so that they can access and we can make those connections happen. So also probably worth mentioning. Because marketplaces are still a relatively new thing in HR, we have a consulting practice as well that if organizations don't want to just go on and find resources, they want to find teams or solutions in the traditional sense, we can do all of that stuff too. But we use the talent on our platform to deliver those services. So we're using the same people.
Yeah.
Crazy not to.
Different way, a different dynamic, but certainly more traditional. And so it's wonderful. That's great. Thank you for sharing that, Mark. I think that you guys are destined for some great success. I mean that genuinely, and I'm excited to see what the future holds. I know there's so many companies out there, ourselves included, that, you know, I can, you know, see utilizing and envisioning this type of service model, particularly in this globalized talent delivery economy that we're living in. So I'll certainly make sure to pass on the information to my HR and compliance team as well, because you never know where these paths can align. And I know that our listeners will find that same sentiment. So thank you for spending some time with us. I always wrap up my podcast by just thanking you and our listeners for spending time. Time is a very valuable thing and one of the more valuable things that we can give to one another. So I really appreciate you sitting down and speaking with us, and I appreciate our listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you today, to provide my philosophical words of wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
thank you also to my Labrador for not snoring during our meeting.
Yay!
So that was an especially good thing for today.
Awesome, awesome. Well, your Labrador didn't snore. My toddler did not invade. We are set up good. But seriously, thank you, Mark. It was absolutely fantastic. And thank you to our listeners. We will see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.